Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 271 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. It's Patrick, he's Justin, and we're back with some more grading episodes. This is where we have our chance to air our grievances or sing the praises of the players of the 2023 season. Justin, I don't have like a witty preamble or anything clever prepared, but after grading all of the pitchers, it's weird to start thinking of things from the offensive side again. I don't know if you're having the same lag that I'm having, thinking about pitching and defense so much, and now suddenly shifting gears, I guess. Do you have the same issue, or maybe I'm just slow today? Sluggish.
A little bit. I mean, yeah, we spent so much time talking about pitchers in our last two grading episodes that now to look at the other side of the ball, I mean, we're still talking a bit about defense here, right? So it's not just hitting that these guys contributed to the team. So there's still a little bit of defensive metrics that go into our grades. But yeah, definitely it's a change of pace from what we've been looking at in terms of numbers the last few weeks.
Either way, I'm very interested to see how different our grades are going to be, because I think my grades are probably going to be very different than yours.
Yeah.
We'll see, though. This is really exciting, and if you're excited by baseball, you can go ahead and check out our stuff at BFMD Podcast. You can Google that, and you'll find us. You can find us on whatever social media platforms. I don't even want to say it anymore. you know where to find us. We love you all for listening to the show. We're getting into that part of the year where there's not much to do except talk about either stuff that's already happened or stuff that doesn't really matter. So I don't know.
Or the rampant rumors that are swirling, but we won't talk about those on this episode.
Yeah, or the rumor and innuendo, and that's not really that exciting for you guys. So we're getting very close to that point of the year where we may have to take a vacation because there's just nothing happening. So let's enjoy these episodes while we have them. And yeah, let's get right into it. We're going to be grading the outfielders today. That's exciting. Everybody loves a good outfielder. And the Jays had, we had outfielders. I don't know if any of them were good or great. But we'll have fun with this, and let's get started. Let's start off with our leadoff. Do you want to start with George?
Yeah, let's talk about George Springer. I mean, the good was that he played the entire season, 683 plate appearances, stole a career high 20 bases, played well in right field. I thought he was pretty good out there. Didn't chase a ton, didn't whiff a ton, still didn't strike out as much, didn't strike out really at all compared to some of his career numbers. The problem was is his batted ball metrics were way down, Patrick. He didn't hit the ball as hard, he didn't barrel the ball as much, just the expected numbers all took a dive in 2023. I'm not certain. I'm not ready to say it's the decline of George Springer already. I mean, obviously, I don't expect him to ever hit like 40 home runs again or get anywhere near close to like those type of numbers. But I do think that this season was, for just like it was for the majority of the offense, a downturn overall. The good news is that he stayed healthy, right? So there you can build off of that. You're not worried about him getting two or three different surgeries this offseason to repair bone spurs or fix his knee, fix his arm that he was having issues with in 2022. So I think I'm not like 100% confident, but I have a high degree of confidence that George is going to bounce back next year. With that being said, his grade from me this year, I mean, if I was grading him just on health, it'd be an A+, but I have to grade him on his performance. So I'll give him a C+. I think he still obviously contributed positively to the team. The fact that he was able to play the entire season is huge. He was one of the only guys that was actually decent on the base paths, in my opinion. and still scored enough runs in the 87 runs, drove in still 72. Like, it wasn't a terrible season for him offensively. It just wasn't what we expect from George. So, yeah, C plus for me.
April was miserable.
Oh, God.
April was absolutely miserable at the plate. The rest of the year was, he had like three, or, well, actually, no, July was miserable too.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he would have a terrible month and then bounce back with two really good months, and then he'd have a terrible month, and then he'd bounce back with two really good months. And it, he was either hitting 190 or 287
yeah.
the whole year, except for September was 265. So, which kind of leveled out. Like, it's hard, I don't know. Like, I have a hard time looking at Springer's season, and I can't for the life of me figure out what to say.
It's strange, right?
His, I mean, his average dropped quite a bit. He was fully healthy, but he just wasn't. I don't know, man.
The biggest difference, Patrick, is a 77 point difference between his slug and his career slug. And that's really what the biggest difference was. Everything else was at least in the neighborhood.
Power brutal drop off. His batting average was down only 9 points from last year, but that's how miserable he was at the start of the year.
Mm.
He still got wheels. He still got contact. He plays good defense. I don't know. I haven't looked at the metrics, but
yep.
Still adequate. Definitely no more than a right fielder at this point. This is tough. This is actually really tough to grade because there's lots of stuff about his game that I still like. It's just, God. Just a very tough start of the year that really kind of, to me, like, I'm having a hard time moving away from thinking about the struggles.
It's like the opposite of Matt Chapman in April.
Yeah. I'll give him a C plus, because actually, despite the fact that he had a miserable April, mm-hmm. I don't know. Is there a way for me to look at his season other than April? I think I have to go. I think I have to do it on a different site than what I have.
Open. Yeah, I mean,
but there's even stuff like, okay, 20 stolen bases at age 34.
Yeah.
Like, that's yeah. good. Yeah, it is. That's really good. Despite the fact that he had a miserable April, let's try to look at it. We're going to probably do the same thing with, what's his face there? Matt Chapman. But I mean, from May 1st until the end of the season, our guy, George Springer, I'm just waiting for the numbers. So, 122 games played in that period of time. He hit 265.
Yeah.
With a 761 OPS, so it's a little bit better.
Still below career numbers, but I mean, it's definitely it's better to look at.
It is. Just that first part of the year, I think, just really kind of damaged looking at his stats. But the feeling is still really good. I think C plus is fair for George.
Yeah, but I mean, look, like last year he was not quite healthy the full season. He still almost he played 133 games last year compared to 154 this year, but he was worth half of the F WAR this year that he was the year before just due to the drop in offense. So I think last year we probably gave him like high B's if I remember correctly, if not a low A, just for the amount that he played in the 4.3 F WAR. This year I think a C somewhere around a C plus is warranted just due to the drop off. Still well above average, just not what we expect from George. So hopefully there's a bounce back here.
Our next guy here, this is tough.
The outfield section is not pleasant for most guys.
Alright, let's get into it. Dalton Varsho. He's a guy that we traded for during the offseason, came in. We had, I wouldn't say high expectations. I think my expectations were quite tempered. He's he was known for being very high in the power, very low when it comes to batting average. I think the expectation coming into this season was that Varsho would be able to take advantage of the construction that was done at the Rogers Center and be able to pull a lot of balls over the left field wall. He ended up hitting .220 for the season, which is about 15 points lower than the previous year, which was already either a career low or very close. The OBP dropped 17 points. The slug dropped close to 50 points. For a 674 OPS, which is very bad.
Yeah.
At the plate, a miserable season for Dalton Varsho. An alarming number of strikeouts. Just no power whatsoever. But in the outfield, I don't get why he didn't win a gold glove.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. His outfield defensive metrics are better than
almost everybody.
Some of the winners.
Yeah.
Really, really strange. Disappointing for him because it kind of just ignores the component of his game that is
what he's known for, really.
Known for. If I was grading the defense, only A plus. But unfortunately, because of how bad he was at the plate, D minus at the plate and an A plus for defense. What does that average out? That's the highest grade I can give and the lowest grade I can give. If we average that out, what is that, a C?
Yeah, probably a C plus.
I still think that's too high. I'm going to go with a C minus. I mean, he would probably tell us himself. Really disappointing season at the plate. Still managed 16 stolen bases, which was what he had last year. Home runs are down. Everything else is down. I don't know what it is. Maybe it was a lingering injury. We're speculating at this point, but it was just a rough season for Varsho.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you kind of nailed it on the head where, if you look at everything outside of the offensive numbers, he's an all-star and maybe one of the better players in the league, but you have to include everything here. And I'm looking at his splits right now, Patrick, and like most Blue Jays, he was incredibly so much worse at home than he was on the road. It's actually like kind of insane looking at some of the Blue Jays home road splits. Like Varsho hit his slash at home was 181, 254, 323 for a 577 OPS compared to on the road. A 254 batting average with a 313 on base and a 448 slug for a 761 OPS. So on the road, Dalton Varsho had a higher OPS than George Springer's full season put together. But unfortunately for Dalton, half the games are played at home. And I don't know what was going on. The Rogers Center didn't work the way the Blue Jays thought it would. They thought it would be relatively similar to what it was before the renos. It definitely turned into more of a pitcher's park. Compared to what
benefit.
It was in the past, to the team's benefit, of course. Yeah, they had a great rotation. Yes, definitely helped the team overall, but it did not lead to the Blue Jays and the way they constructed their lineup with lefties like Belt and Varsho expected to hit more home runs at home than they did. Varsho only hit 8 home runs at home, hit 12 on the road, and had less doubles at home. Just like completely just fell off at home. But, I mean, the defense was outstanding. You're right. He was robbed of a gold glove. I mean, you gave him a C-. I'm giving him a C. I still think that the potential is there. I hope that he's going to be the center fielder next year unless they bring in somebody crazy who is better at center field than him, which I don't think is possible. So the Jays are going to need him to produce more offensively. We're going to talk about Kevin Kiermaier next. But the Jays do need more out of their center field production from Varsho than what he gave them playing predominantly left field last year, or this year, I guess, technically still 2023. But they need more offensively from him. I think he's got more to offer. He was below his career averages by quite a bit this season. He actually pulled them down quite a bit with the way he performed. But I still think there is more to offer here. As long as he can continue to provide the same level of defense, he doesn't need to improve by much. I mean, get the batting average up around 240 everything else will climb back up towards career norms, and I think he'll be fine. He just needs to put more balls in play, chase a little bit less. The whiffs need to improve. Just make a bit more contact, and I think he'll be fine. So that's, I'm going to give him a C, just even C. Kevin Kiermaier. I think the Jays got everything they could have wanted when they signed Kevin Kiermaier for 1 year. I mean, they kind of hoped he'd be a stopgap into this offseason's free agent market. There's not a lot of outfield options available. I mean, Cody Bellinger's out there still. Juan Soto's rumored in the trade market, but we won't really talk about that because by the time this episode comes out, both those guys could be signed or traded. But Kevin did everything the Jays could have wanted. Terrific in in the outfield again. Won a gold glove, which is no surprise. He was terrific when he was out there. Played more games this year and more plate appearances than he had in a while. He was able to get in 408 plate appearances. Did miss some time with injury. Did get platooned quite a bit when there was tough lefties on the mound. It was either him or Varsha who's in the lineup on any given day. But was awesome on the base pass. Stole 14 bases. It was the most he'd stolen in a while. Hit 265 in the 9 spot for the team. Actually ended up getting moved up the order a little bit towards the end of the year. 741 OPS. Hit 8 home runs. Like, I think Kevin Kiermaier delivered. You look at the batting metrics, and there's a lot of blue on the Savant page, but that's who he is. He's not Vlad. He's not Bo. They're not just going to have a bunch of hard hit balls everywhere. Kevin's a contact guy. Slash hitter, pull hitter, whatever. But he made it work. And I mean, I don't think I can give him below an A minus. I'm gonna give him an A minus.
Interesting. Yeah, he's a guy that you plug into the 9 spot and hope that he can turn the lineup over. And he was pretty good at that. Yeah, I can't say I'm overly impressed with what he did at the plate, but he's not a power guy. But if he's not a power guy and he's a contact guy, he still only hit 265. Which is better than he had the previous two seasons, which is great. Defense, let's be honest, there are very few players in the last 20 years who are as good defensively as Kevin Kiermaier.
Yeah.
I challenge anybody to you know, go through the look at what he's done throughout his career and find somebody who's done better in center field the last 10 years. At least. Great runner. His wheels it was incredible to watch a 33-year-old steal 14 bases after having two seasons where that production was just like cut down.
Mm-hmm.
Huge resurgence for Kiermaier. I think he'll probably spend the rest of his career as a 1 year mercenary signed by a team. But that could be the Jays.
There's still a chance he's back. Yeah. There's no certainty that he won't be back. It's just, will he be the primary option? I mean, they're going to be looking elsewhere.
That's the thing. It's like, okay, he gave us 370 at bats this year, which is again a 3-year high.
Right.
He's not your everyday center fielder anymore. The Jays have a guy for that in Dalton Varsho. The question becomes, you know, with no Whit Merrifield, you need somebody in the outfield. Like, the guys that they have on the roster are not enough, not even remotely close. And obviously, Cody Bellinger fits that hole. But if you get Ohtani, or if you trade and get Soto, or both, you ain't signing Cody Bellinger. You don't have the money. So...
yeah.
Kevin Kiermaier on another $9 million deal? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe come back. I'm giving him a B, though, because I don't think he... I know, like, we have to kind of grade the person based on like what our expectations are and what they were able to deliver within the context of like the type of player they are. But he had a cold, a very, very cold month. I think that was May, was not good. And he did kind of fall off the last like 20 games of the season.
Yeah. So I mean, his,
I think a B is fair.
His pre and post All-Star numbers are pretty similar. His hot month was May. His cold month was June. Like, he hit 366 in May and then followed up with the 154. You know, law of averages.
Yeah.
So I mean, overall for the season, you take away those 2 months, and he was anywhere between 237 and 269 or 266 every month. So there's nothing wrong with what Kiermaier did, and yeah, it was for the 1 year deal he was on. It was tremendous.
I think a B is fair, though.
I think I think you can give him a B. Yeah, I like the.
I think a B. yeah, I mean, I think a B is reasonable.
Yeah.
Let's. Who's our next?
So yeah, we're gonna lump in Whit Merrifield, Kevin Biggio, and Davis Schneider into the outfield episode. Whit and Kevin obviously played a majority of their time split between second base, Kevin at first base, and then some outfield time for both. And we're putting Schneider in here just because we don't want to have five players in this one and then eight in the infield section. And Schneider did play three games, including two starts in left field, so technically he could be classified as an outfielder.
Let's talk about Whit Merrifield.
Yeah, another guy who's no longer a Blue Jay.
And there's no chance he would be returning.
Unlikely, yeah, unless they trade Espinal and then need, I don't know. But yeah, it's unlikely, highly unlikely he comes back.
Highly, highly unlikely. This is tough because, man, early season Whit Merrifield was All-Star.
He was an All-Star, yeah.
Yeah, and then he hit 232 in August and 194 in September.
Yeah, yeah. It was a fall. It was
dramatic. He fell off. He fell off hard.
Yeah.
Probably ran out of gas. I mean, 34 years old. He did have 26 swipes, which I'm a big fan of. His home run total matched last year, but he's not a home run guy.
He hit 7 home runs in July.
Yeah. So finished the season 272 average, which is way up from 2022, where he was dealing with the lingering injury issues.
Mm-hmm.
318 OBP, which is, yep. Okay, a 382 slug, which is about what you would expect for a 34-year-old guy who's coming off of, like, multiple, like, nasty injuries. He's still got the juice around the base paths. If I put my hand over who this player is, and I just ignore the fact that it's Whit Merrifield, I'd be thrilled to have this player on my team.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great runner. He's not really a great fielder anymore, but he's great at contact. He's not going to really strike out a lot. He's not going to walk either, but this is like the veteran guy you would want on the team. And then when I remove my hand and I see it's Whit Merrifield, then I think, well, this isn't... He's not a guy that I would trade for again if I would go back in time. There was a time when, probably around 2018, when our podcast first started, where I kept saying we need Whit Merrifield on this team. But age 34, Whit Merrifield, who fell off hard at the end of the year, not so much. My grade for him is a C.
Okay. I forgot to mention with Kiermaier, but his OPS at home was also 50 points lower than it was on the road. Witt's OPS at home, 102 points lower than his OPS on the road. So there's something to be said about Rogers Center.
That's weird,
not
right?
Working. And I mean, you can say, oh, one season, small sample size, but it's so far it's all four guys that we've looked at today have had worse numbers at home than they did on the road. So there's something going on, you know? That's
sure is.
Maybe it's how they're storing the baseballs at Rogers Center. They have, I don't know. It's the balls are dead for some reason. But that's my observation of the day. Anyway, but yeah, Whit Merrifield. The problem I had with the Blue Jays, the guys who played in the outfield this year, was none of them had big power. Obviously, Springer still hit 21 home runs. That's fine. Varsho hit 20. But you look at their Savant metrics, and like nobody had like a bunch of red dots in terms of like the contact metrics. They're all, except for Springer, like Witt and Kevin Kiermaier are contact guys, hit for a decent average. Like obviously Witt still hit 272. Varsho, on the other hand, is more of a boom or bust guy. Springer, you could lump a little bit into the contact side of things this year. It's not his game though. He kind of played away from his strength, which is hitting the ball at the ballpark a bit more. So it's interesting to see that the Blue Jays kind of went away from the power approach this year and went more to the slashy contact approach. And when we get to the infield grades, you'll see more examples of that for guys who just didn't have as much power this year as they normally do. But I think it was just a team-wide issue where they weren't trying to pull home runs. They were trying to make more contact. And obviously it led to a playoff sweep. So that's another observation I'm making today. But Whit Merrifield's who we're grading right now. I like your point about going back in time and maybe not trading for Whit. I think I'd still do it. Based on what the Blue Jays gave up, it was really nothing. Like Max Castillo is never going to pan out into some sort of above average major league starting pitcher or even reliever probably. And I think Whit Merrifield gave the Blue Jays more than enough value over his season and a half to make it worth it. I think your grade's on point. I'm going to give him a C+, just because of the fact that he was able to fill in time when Kiermaier was out with an injury for a bit there after he scratched himself up at Fenway Park on their mangled cheese grater in center field. So yeah, I mean, he did a great job. He was a good platoon option. Having him be a right-handed option to spell Varsho or Kevin Kiermaier against tough lefties was nice. I think I'd love to see him back, honestly, in like a reserve role. But I don't think the price or the fit is correct, and I'd rather the Blue Jays either promote from within or find somebody a bit younger. But I think I'm still happy he was a Blue Jay. I like Whit Merrifield, and I'll give him a C+. And that's all I have to say.
Let's move on and talk about one of your favorite players.
Yeah.
And a guy that I'm very, very interested in grading.
Kevin Biggio. Yeah. Yeah, Kevin.
What's your word?
Kevin had a season that's tough to grade because he didn't qualify for a lot of Savant metrics. I think you need 300 at-bats, and he only got to 289. He just walked too damn much. You know, he had 338 plate appearances, but that's not what qualifies you for batted ball data. But Kevin had such a strange year, spent time in the minor leagues after starting so poorly, but then finished on a high note and reminded fans really why the Blue Jays liked this guy so much when he was coming up through the minors. I mean, his pre-All-Star break numbers, Patrick, 155 plate appearances. He had an OPS of 645. His batting average was below 200. It was 197. Post-All-Star break and 183 plate appearances, so 30 more than he had pre-All-Star break. He hit 272 with a 404 on base, a 361 slug for a 765 OPS. That's the Kevin Biggio that people thought the Blue Jays would get. And I mean, he actually had he had a higher batting average against lefties, albeit in only 53 plate appearances, but his batting average is slash line against righties is still pretty good. I mean, he hit all nine of his home runs came off right-handed pitching. Only hit 223, but the power was a bit higher. 709 OPS against righties. He's definitely a guy who's a platoon option. He's never going to be a full-time starter, which is totally fine because the Blue Jays need bench bats like this guy who are capable of playing multiple positions. He can play the outfield. We know he can play second, first, and third base. So the Blue Jays just have this guy as like, this is your starter against some righties who don't throw 100 miles an hour. Like I wouldn't start him against Garrett Cole, but I'd start him against anybody else really. And he's a guy who can be in the game until you get to a tough lefty-lefty bullpen battle, and then he's going to be out of the game, which is fine. He's also a guy who can come in when you need a good pinch runner. He still has value on the base paths. and a guy who can pencil in when you have to get funky with your defense later in the game. So I do think Cavan had a terrific second half. It's I'm going to give him a B for bounce back. that's terrible. Over the full season, I'm giving him a B because he bounced back tremendously and secured his roster spot going forward, because without the second half that he had, there was a chance of him being moved this offseason. So good for Cavan. I'm glad he performed well, because I do still think this guy has terrific second string bench bat value. That's a big sigh, my dude.
Let's try to look at it in a vacuum. 235 is above his career,
career average. Yeah.
His career average. 340 OBP is about on par with his career average. 370 slug is higher than the last two seasons, which is good. And a 710 OPS is good for an above, or about a replacement level, or about slightly above replacement level player. Like, you'd be happy with a 710. The 800 OPS is like dead as far as being the metric for a great player. So 710 is like, that's not bad. I don't know. See, Cavan to me is tough, because
the average OPS this year, by the way, was 734 across all of Major League Baseball.
Yeah. This is tough. I had hoped for more power out of him, but
I mean, if you look at it this way, if you give him 600 plate appearances, he'll be close to 20 home runs. He's never going to get that many plate appearances.
No.
But there's nothing wrong with that from a guy who's on your bench.
I'm just trying to, I'm having a hard time, because on one hand, like, yeah, I want to grade him as, like, I'm trying not to let the fact that he's a bench player color my grade too much, but I like what I saw from him this year. Huge improvements at the plate. Huge. Very happy with that. I guess I just wish the average was just better. I was hoping that he'd be like a 240 career guy, and we're just not getting that.
Yeah, I don't think he will. And I think that's fine. I think we have to accept that. Hopefully, second half, Cavan Biggio. I don't expect him to hit 272 over a full season, but I think hopefully that is more of who he is going forward, is a guy who just is able to make more contact and put the ball in play, because good things happen to him when he puts the ball in play.
He's a guy, he's like, Cavan is the kind of player that I desperately want to like and to succeed. And I do like him. But we're not getting quite what I had hoped we would get out of him. So I don't know. He'll definitely be a bench bat next year. But yep. Is he going to get priced out eventually of being a bench bat because of...
Well, I think Cavan's going to be a bench bat his whole playing career.
Okay.
And whether or not that's going to be in Toronto is another story. But I think at this point, for him, it's his... The fact that he's a lefty bat and the fact that he plays four positions is what keeps him... Is what builds security for him, right? There's not too many Cavan Biggios that are out there who can play, I would say, above average at four positions. You're like, you don't feel bad, or you don't look at your lineup and see, oh shit, Cavan's in right field today, we're screwed. Like, you don't think that when you see him out there. Like, you're like, okay, he might not make any tremendous plays, but he's going to make all the plays you'd expect him to make. You don't have existential dread when you see Cavan Biggio's name in the lineup.
That's absolutely correct.
It's not like seeing Derek Fisher out there, you know?
I'm still struggling, and I think I'm just going to land on, like, a C.
Sure, that's fine.
Maybe, like, a C plus. If you were a team, like, if you were building a team and you were in, like, the 15th round of, like, a fantasy draft and you saw Kevin Biggio was available, would you go out of your way to get him on your squad? Like, would he be the guy that you'd be like, yeah?
I think I'd like Kevin Biggio on my team. If I'm building a 26-man roster, though, I think he'd be closer to, like, the 22, 23 mark. He's like the end of the bench guy. He's a bench guy, right? Like, you want to fill out your starters and your bullpen and everything first. But Kevin Biggio is a guy that I wouldn't hesitate to add to my roster just because, again, of his versatility. And you know he's a hard worker because you know who his dad is. So, yeah.
I think there's a C plus is appropriate.
That's fair. And I mean, I gave him a B, so we're not far off. Okay. The last guy we're going to talk about in this grading episode is Davis Schneider.
I'm ready for this.
Yeah, take the lead on this one.
This is weird to me because I'm having... Actually, why am I struggling? Oh, I typed his name in. It's David Schneider. Well, it's Davis.
That's real struggle.
Because everybody was so excited because we got Babe Schneider the first... good chunk of time. He did finish the season with 116 at-bats, 141 plate appearances, and a 1,007 OPS. Which, yeah. I mean, Schneider's probably one of the reasons why this team made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Him and Chris Bassett. What do I like about Davis Schneider? Well, he's a power hitter, for one. He had 8 home runs and 116 at-bats. What does that average out to? 8 divided by... I'm trying to figure out what he would hit over the course of a whole season. Times 162. No, that's not right. That's not how you do it. How do you do it? Justin, help me with the math.
What are we trying to do?
I'm trying to figure out how many at-bats it takes for him to hit... a home run.
Oh, if he's doing 8 per 116, are we doing plate appearances or at bats?
At bats.
At bats?
Yeah.
So I mean if he was 8 for 116, if we just make that 8 for 120, it makes it a little bit easier. So every 60 at bats he'd hit 4. So if he got 600 plate appearances and hit 1 every 60, or 4 every 60, he'd be a 40 home run hitter.
That, yeah. I see, that's the thing is, like, that's probably not sustainable.
Yeah.
I don't know that he could be a 40 home run hitter. He could be wrong.
He could be, but I mean, even if you just look at his rolling X weighted on base average over his last 50 plate appearances, he definitely fell below league average. At the end of the year, I think pitchers figured him out a little bit. And he was getting regular playing time for a bit there because he was hot. And then when he cooled off, he was never able to really recapture that hotness. And I mean, nobody was expecting him to hit 500 like he was doing at the beginning of his call-up. So I think just, yeah, the law of averages definitely got him. It's the same thing that happened to Matt Chapman after April. Like, he had to regress to his career numbers at some point. And he did it heavily. And Davis Schneider in the minor leagues was not a 300 hitter ever, really. So, I mean, you have to expect that he was going to fall off eventually. It's just a shame that it happened when it did because the Jays could have used a sustained hot streak. Like, he hit 275 in Buffalo this year, Patrick, and he hit 276 in the big leagues. So, really, the only difference in the big leagues was he just hit at a higher slug than he did in Buffalo. That was the only difference. And it wasn't even that much higher. Like, he hit 21 home runs in 400 plate appearances with Buffalo. So, like, again, 5 every 100. So, again, he's on pace for, like, 40-plus home runs there as well, too. So he may just be that type of hitter. But I do think that you're right. He's probably not a 40 home run hitter at the big league level, at least not yet. It's possible he gets there. He is just 24, but he's also a guy who we only have 141 big league plate appearances from. So how do we... The problem I have is it seems like a lot of people are just ready to hand him a job on this team. I think he still has to come into spring and have a good spring. He's got a leg up, 100%. But I don't think we can just say, oh, yeah, he's on the team next year. He still has to put the work in off season. But there's definitely people online. I'm not saying you are one of them, by the way. But there's people online who are like, oh, yeah, David Schneider's got to be in the lineup almost every day next year. And I'm not quite there yet.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Can we grade this guy based off 141 plate appearances?
I will say this when it comes to... Davis Schneider. Based on what I saw from him, B+.
Yeah.
Incomplete grade, though, because it's just not enough time.
Not enough sample.
And as hot as he was when he started, he fell off hard.
Yeah. I'm not even going to give him a letter grade. I'm just going to say incomplete.
Fair enough.
But
I mean, God, I can't remember the last time a player debuted,
especially just like,
was that exciting
and not a highly touted prospect either. Right. Like nobody really knew about this guy until this year when he started just smacking home runs in Buffalo. He just kind of quietly, he's been in the system since 2017. Like he's been a Blue Jay since he was drafted. And he was drafted as a 28th round pick, by the way, 849th overall in the 2017 draft by the Jays. So a guy who nobody would have been aware of until probably this year. Cause I mean, last year he hit 14 home runs between Vancouver and New Hampshire. And then this year, and then he hit two at AAA at the end of the season. Yeah. He had 16 home runs last year. And then this year, all of a sudden he's just like, yeah, I'm gonna just start hitting home runs every day. And the walk rate was high. I mean, he still walked about 15% in the big leagues. He struck out a bit more than he was at Buffalo, which is to be expected. It's big league pitching. But when he makes contact, it's loud. He's got a good barrel rate, but he just needs to have more of a sample size. And I hope he's down working. I hope he's taking some time off and then gets to work early on in the off season here to kind of build his rapport with the major league coaches, get into the lab down in Dunedin and really work. I want him to earn a spot on the team because I think the potential is there for him to be a fringe everyday player if he can recreate what he did this year. He can make it tough for the team to keep him out of the lineup, and I think that's a good thing. You need guys to come up from within. That's how you build sustainable teams, is by having low cost, underpaid, unfortunately, players like David Schneider. So hopefully he can do well.
Is there anything about his game that you're gravely concerned about?
The only thing I'm concerned about is just the lack of major league sample size. That's it. I think everything else that he does, he's got positional versatility again. He can play second, third, and a little bit of outfield. So he's got that going for him. Like there's nothing wrong with his game in that sense. The only thing I need to see is just more. I need more. That's it. He even played some first base in AAA this year. So it's like he's got that he's a right-handed Kevin Biggio with a bit more batting average. So
a lot more, I think.
So I mean, if you have both those guys on your team, Schneider and Biggio, they complement each other quite well because they're the opposite hand of each other, and they both have a similar approach where that's good patience, see a lot of pitches, and can play all over the field. So yeah, I like this guy a lot. I hope he earns a spot on the team because I think that he's got all of the tools to be a good major league player.
I think we were pretty critical today. I didn't think we would thought maybe it was me.
I don't think so. I think that we were fair because I mean, you look at the difference between George Springer of this year and George Springer of last year, and just the drop off in terms of the underlying numbers, and it doesn't give you a ton of confidence going forward. You look at Dalton Varsho, I mean, but I mean, again, I'm looking at Davis Schneider, and His numbers are tough to say. Oh yeah, he was worse at home or worse on the road because they're pretty similar. But again, small sample size for him there. They're actually pretty much identical home and road splits. But all of your regular players, Biggio, Merrifield, Kiermaier, Varsho, Springer, were all worse at home than they were on the road. So there's something to it with these Rogers Centre's renovations that they didn't go quite as the Blue Jays hoped they would. And we did look at three lefty bats today, and lefties were supposed to love the new dimensions, and they obviously didn't. So I have to see more of these guys, more Varsho, more Springer, more Biggio, more Schneider, especially at home next year. And hopefully with the changes that the Blue Jays have made to their coaching staff, giving Mattingly more of a say, moving Hudgens out, it may maybe lead to some positive changes in the team. So. But yeah, that's all I got. I think we were critical enough. I think we could have been more critical. I think we kind of gave some guys a bit of a pass based on personal feelings for them.
Okay, I'm good with that then. I think that just about ends it for this episode. If you like what we do, go ahead and find us out in the internet. Just Google us at BFMD Podcast. We love doing this. Next episode... unless there's some breaking news, will be the infielders, and boy, that's going to be a spicy episode.